Well, amen. One of our men paid me a great compliment. I don't know if he thought of it as a great compliment. But a couple of years ago, one of our deacons looked at me and he said, "You like to think, don't you?" And I said, "Well, I hope I'm a thinker. And can I tell you that Miss Melba, she thinks about what she's doing?" And I mean that as a compliment. There's so many people that just wing it, and they don't really think through what they're saying, and in her case, what not only she said, but what she's saying. But I'm telling you, when people say things like this, we don't sing dead people songs. We do. And we're going to continue as long as the Lord blesses people with those beautiful songs. And I don't care if that lady lived in 1800 or 1900 or, you know, or 1400. That's a good song. Good song. Well, I call your attention tonight to 2 Samuel. We'll be in chapter 13 again tonight. And to be honest with you, I had all intents and purposes of finishing this chapter, and it's just not going to happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to do like we've been doing now for almost 3 years. We're going to bite off a little piece of it. We're going to preach from it. And then the next time we'll pick up there and we'll bite another little piece of it. And one of these days we'll look up and we'll be at the end of 2 Samuel. It took us over a year and a half to get through 1 Samuel. And so here we are now knocking on another year and a half. And we are halfway through, so we'll just keep plugging. The title of the message tonight is Absalom's Hatred. Absalom's Hatred. Now, last week I finished with verse 19. I want to begin in verse 19 tonight, and the reason for that is because it sets the background. And so it's a good way for us to kind of review what took place in the last message. There's a man named Carl Gutbrod, and he made this statement. He said, "David is another Eli." And I don't know if you know the story of Eli, but way back when we were in 1 Samuel, I think it's around chapter 2, Eli was the old high priest of God. And he had two boys that were grown, and when they were young, they were never restrained. They were named Hophni and Phinehas. And those boys were going through the families of Israel, and they were taking the best meats, and basically, if somebody balked at that, they would beat them up. I call them the mafia. And so you had a man named Eli that did not restrain his two boys. Well, now what do you have? You've got David as a second Eli. When you look at what happened last time, you find David, and we'll see this here in a moment, David was angry because of what one of his boys had done to one of his girls. But you never find David acting upon it. He never seeks justice in this situation. And so I want you to just remember that when you and I are trying to make godly decisions, sometimes wrong has to be taken care of and dealt with. And so tonight I want us to look at verse 19 where we ended last week. The Bible says, "And Tamar put ashes on her head, rent or tore her garment of divers colors, and laid her hand on her head and went on crying." Now, why is she doing this? Because it was just a few minutes before when her half-brother, Amnon, who raped her, has now humiliated her more by sending her out, never wanting to even look at her again. The word that was used was he loved her. In reality, he lusted her. And then he loathed her. After his sin was done, there was no pleasure in it at all. It's just get away from me. I don't want to have anything to do with you. And so here she is. She is a godly young lady. She has been treated horribly. She has had an awful act committed against her. And so what does she do? She thinks, well, my life is over. Nobody's going to want to be my husband. I mean, after all, you know, I am marred now. Now, in our way of thinking today, we don't see that at all. But in ancient times, that was the culture. Right or wrong, that was the way that the cultures behaved back then. And so what does she do? She rips the sleeve of her multicolored garment. She puts ashes on her head. She's going through the street, disheveled. And what does she do? She goes and finds Absalom. Now, who is Absalom? He is her brother. He is her full brother, right? Not a half brother, but a full brother from David's third wife. And so we have her now coming to Absalom. In verse number 20, we're going to see that Absalom, before she even says anything, he just sees her. He says, "Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee?" And so the first thing we see is we see Absalom's inquiry. I think just by the fact that he asked this question, I think that Amnon had a reputation. Absalom is probably not much younger than Amnon. He's David's third son. So there's probably only a couple of three years between these boys. And let's face it, when you've got siblings that are in a certain pecking order, the younger ones usually know what's going on with the older ones and vice versa. And so you've got an inquiry because he knows that Amnon has got this reputation. When I look at this story that's about to take place at the remainder of this chapter, I see a lot of parallels with what happened early in the chapter. If you look at the early part of the chapter, say the first 18, 19 verses, and then you look at the next 19 or 20 verses, you'll see quite a few parallels between the two. First of all, in the first part, you see there is a planning that took place by Amnon. Now, he is assisted by his cousin, Jonadab. But there is a planning that goes on. In our passage tonight, we're going to see a planning of Absalom. In other words, Amnon's not the only one that can plan. Absalom can plan as well. Not only do we see the planning, but when Amnon was thinking about how could he lure Tamar to his place, he knew that he had to have her accessible. So what does he do? He hatches a plan. I'll feign to be sickness or be sick. I'll make like I have a sickness. And so I'll say, "Dad, would you send my sister Tamar, let her cook for me?" And so he needs access. He's got to have her in a certain position to do the deed. Fast forward to the second half of the chapter. And what do we have? We've got Amnon that must have access, or Absalom needs to have access to Amnon. So what does he do? He plans a shindig. All right? Not only that, we see that there's a rape that takes place. And then there's another sin that parallels that takes place. There's a murder that takes place. Then you have the reaction of David. He is angry. And now when Amnon is going to be murdered, he's angry. And then you see that after she is raped, there is a solace that Absalom gives to his sister. And after Amnon dies, You've got Jonadab that is now no longer being with Amnon because he's dead. Now his allegiance is to give solace to David. And so there's a lot of parallels that we see. And so tonight, as we look, I want us to just think about the inquiry that he had. If you look at verse number 20, and he tells her, or asks her the question, then he says, "But now hold thy peace." In other words, don't talk about this, Tamar. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing. Now that's awful easy for somebody to say that hasn't been wronged. But when you look at her, here she is, probably a young teenage girl, and she has been violated, then she has been humiliated, and now her older brother looks at her and he says, "It's okay, don't worry about it." I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to get her to understand it is not your fault. You did not bring this upon yourself. And I think in some ways that's a good thing. But I think that in Absalom's case, he is probably just simply making this the first step in the plan that he has already hatched. And so I think that he has a genuine love for his sister. I mean, after all, they have the same father and same mother. So they would be closer than some of the other siblings. And so he says, "Don't worry about it. It's okay." But I think that his plan had already begun to formulate in his mind. All the I's had not been dotted and all the T's had not been crossed. But there's no doubt he's already thinking retribution. That's what he's already thinking. It's curious to me that the writer of 2 Samuel says this at the end of verse 20. "So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house." Now remember, Amnon had a house. And somewhere, probably close by the palace, Absalom had a house. They were the king's sons. They had all kind of privileges. And so it's curious to me that she did not go back to her father's house, because that's where she had been living. She was the king's daughter. She was the king's virgin daughter. And so she lived with David, but no longer does she go back to the palace. Now she goes to her brother's house and she lives out her life basically at Absalom's house. And so we have the inquiry that Absalom asked. And so then he closes this by simply saying, "It's okay, don't worry about it." And he gives her security at his house. One of the things that we've got to be very careful about, especially young people, you got to be careful where you get your security. There are times when people will influence young people, and the next thing you know, they've turned their back on their family and they have begun to trust somebody that has just stepped into their life more and more. And that's a danger, because in most situations, the families love you more than anybody else. But can I tell you that I don't necessarily think that's the case right here? I'm not so sure that David's family was the model family. David was a lousy father. Now there are times when you have fathers and they want to do the right thing. But yet those same fathers have children and they follow the devil. Some of the greatest preachers that have ever lived have had children that have denied the faith. I mentioned one the other day. I mentioned Jonathan Edwards. I mentioned his boy. Turned his back on everything that his father taught. Billy Sunday had that happen. Dwight Moody had that happen. You've got all of these people and they have done marvelous feats for God. David did great feats for God. But David's family was awful. And so we see that Absalom has now stepped into the scene. And the first thing he does is he tries to console his sister. He moves her into his house so that he can always give her the security that she needs. And she's probably thinking, well, at least my brother loves me, even though my dad's not going to do anything. And that's a sad place to be if you're a young person, when you've got a sibling that maybe cares more for you than your mother or father does. Well, the second thing I want you to look at is I want you to look at Absalom's indignation. Look with me at verse 22. He's seething, all right? Absalom spake, unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad. For Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. The word force there is the same word that was in verse 14. It has the idea of humiliation. He humiliated her. How did that happen? First of all, he raped her, and then second of all, he kicked her out of the house. He could have at least halfway made it right had he been willing to marry her, even though they were blood halfway. But he humiliated her more by getting her out of the house. He had one of his servants lock the door after her. And so Absalom, when he hears this story, he hates him. It's not that he hates him because he's the oldest. Oh, no. He hates him because what he did to his sister. And you and I can think of things that we have read about, we've seen stories about, how that maybe in the country, in the Appalachian foothills, there would be a girl that'd been wronged, and the next thing you know, there's a shotgun wedding. All right? You say, you're going to do right or you're going to die. Yes, sir. And so you've got Absalom, and he is thinking, yeah, he did that. He's dying. And so we see that there's indignation there. He wouldn't even speak to him. I mean, when they're walking in and out of David's house, the palace, he doesn't say hello. He doesn't say kiss my foot. He didn't say anything, neither good nor bad. He wants nothing to do with him, but he's got a plan, and that plan is about to come to fruition. Well, when you look at verse number 23, we see Absalom's invitation. Now, can I tell you that one of the things that some people fall into the trap of, and we all do it. We fall into the trap of thinking that sin is going to never have to be paid for. We have a tendency to think that if enough time goes by, God's forgot about it. You know, one of the interesting things, and I think that if you'll read this, this will bear me out. I don't know that God is even thought of in this chapter. You know, a lot of chapters, it'll say something like, "Then God sent Nathan," or "God said to tell David this." And there's all types of references. But I don't think you'll find one in chapter 13. That's just a thought that I had, and you could prove me wrong, but I don't think so. And so you've got Absalom, and he has this invitation, and he has this plan. Now, how long has it been since the rape? From the time of the rape until now, 2 full years. 2 years is a long time unless something is seething inside of you. Let me tell you a funny story. When I was in high school, I had a girlfriend. It's not uncommon. A lot of boys have girlfriends. There was a guy that was a friend of mine, and evidently he got it in his mind. He was from Macon and played for a football team. And I was in Savannah, and I played for a football team. So he came to visit, and I got him a date, and we went out on a double date. After I dropped everybody off, that joker called my girlfriend on the phone. Well, she told me about it, and I thought, okay, all right. And so that whole summer, I didn't say a thing to him. Because I knew that the first football game of the year, we played them. He was a running back. I played quarterback, and also I played safety. First game of the season, we're playing in Macon. And I can't explain this, but as the Lord is my witness, this is the way that this transpired. The first time they had the ball, the quarterback turned and pitched it to him with a sweep going right, which would be my left. And our linemen were going and they were getting blocked, and the linebackers were going and they were getting blocked, and all of a sudden it was as though time slowed down to nothing. It was like it was slow motion. And something clicked in my mind, and it said this: this is it. Now, I've been thinking about this all summer long, all right? And it seemed as though that God set it up. Let that sink in a minute. And then it was like the Red Sea parted. The blockers were no longer there. They had taken somebody else, and so it was just me and him. And I just thought, I'm going to hit him with everything I've got. And so I launched at him. And when I hit him, I must have knocked him probably 10, 12 feet in the air. 2 years later, I'm visiting my uncle who lives in Macon. I'm going out to the mall, Macon Mall. It was new, and he's like, hey, you ought to go see what the mall looks like. All right, I'll go out to the mall. So I go out to the mall. As I'm walking in that mall, I run into him. The first thing out of his mouth: do you remember when you hit me in that football game 2 years ago? And I said, yeah. And he goes, I've never been hit that hard in my life. And I said, well, good. I never even told him why. But there was something on the inside of me that thought, vengeance is mine, saith Tommy. All right. Can I tell you that on a grander scale, Absalom has got that thought? Now, that's just a humorous old high school football story from a million years ago. But this story here in the Bible is one that has lasting ramifications. You've got old Absalom, and for two full years, he is plotting. How can I make this happen? Amnon doesn't really kind of want to be around me, and even whenever we do pass, we don't really speak. So what are we going to do? How can I do this? Look with me at verse 23. Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazor. Now what is that? Once or twice a year, you would have some guys that would come in that were good with shearing the sheep. They would take the wool, they would sell it, and that would be a crop, just like they would grow grain. This would be a crop that they could sell, and they would make a lot of money. It's similar to in the springtime when my relatives grow those Vidalia onions, and I bring some of them back and give them to you guys. When they have that come in, that's a pretty big deal on their farm. And so he has sheep. And those things get woolly. And they have to be sheared. And they've got these huge sheets full of sheared wool. And he's making money. And so what he does is he says, I'm going to throw a party. Now, he's not told anybody what his plan is. Not yet. But he's about to have some people that he's going to give some instructions to. So he goes to his dad. Look with me. Verse 24. Absalom came to the king and said, Behold, now thy servant hath sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant. Now he's calling himself the servant, the king's servant. All right? He's showing some humility. At least he makes like he is. And the king said to Absalom, Nay, my son, let us not all go, or now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee. In other words, no, I appreciate the gesture, I appreciate the invitation, but all of us don't need to go, because if we do, all your profit's going to be gone, it's going to cost too much. So we'll just, you know, don't throw the party. Or at least we're not going to let all of us go because we don't want to have that much of a burden on you. And so when he offers them, it says he pressed him. Now when I was reading that this week and again this afternoon, my first thought was he has a plan in place. Is his plan just for Amnon? Or could possibly he be plotting against the king? Because, you know, it was not an uncommon thing in the East for families to just start killing off each other. You have that happening in the New or in the Old Testament in some situations. You certainly had it during the time of the Romans. And you've got people that were willing to kill this person for power. You've got these kings and their boys, whenever they're about to die, what do? They begin to knock each other around, kill each other. But if they took their father out, he could step into the void. And so it could be that as he pressed him, maybe David had a little discernment. Maybe God protected him from being murdered himself. Because I'm telling you, Absalom is a vile human being. Now, he is supposedly protecting and trying to revenge his sister. He wants to make sure that everybody thinks that he's an honorable guy. But he presses David, and finally David says no. But then Absalom says to him, Well, if not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us. And there's got to be something in David's mind thinking, I wonder if there's something in the background here. David is not a stupid man. He knows what happened 2 years ago. He knows that for the last 2 years, his daughter has been at her brother's house and not at his house. He knows there's something happening. And he says, let Amnon go with us. And the king said unto him, Why should he go with thee? And here we go again. But Absalom pressed him, he urged him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. So you have the venue of the plan is the sheep shearing. You've got the plan planned in detail. And so, now what do you got to do? You got to get your henchmen in place. In verse number 27, he wants the king to let Amnon and his brothers go. But when you come to verse 28, you see this. Absalom, who is the king's son, he's got servants. Some of these are his most trusted servants. Now, when the king's son tells you to do something, you don't really have much of a choice. Because all he's got to do, like the king, is to give a death pronouncement and you're dead. And so he calls some of his trusted servants and he says, mark you now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine. He's going to do his best to get old Amnon drunk. He's wanting to make sure that they keep his goblet full. They're wanting to make sure that he is good and liquored up so that he can't fight back. Now, I don't know what kind of a warrior Amnon was, but I know in many occasions older brothers seem to be the ones that are the toughest. And so you've got Amnon, and Absalom is thinking, well, we get him to where he's inebriated. We get him to where he's about liquored up. We'll be able to do whatever I want to do to him. And so he says, now when you see that he's happy, when he's merry with wine, he said, and I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not. Have not I commanded you? And I'm the king's son. So in other words, we've got this big party going on. And I'm going to be talking about how many pounds of wool I've got from this flock, and how many pounds of wool I got from that flock. And I'm going to be talking about how bountiful God has been to me this year. Here's some more wine, and we're going to make sure that old Amnon gets a lot of it. And here he is, he gets a little bit of tipsy about him, and the next thing you know, he says, smite. And I don't have any idea how many it took. I don't know if it was 2, 3, 6. I do not know. The only thing I can think about it is a visual is Julius Caesar. Coming up next month is something that I don't know why I remembered this. Of all the things in history, I don't know why I remembered March the 15th, the Ides of March. All right? The Ides of March was when Julius Caesar was killed, and you had those senators led by Brutus, and they are stabbing him right, left, sideways, all over, and he's just left a bloody mess. He's been executed. That's the picture that we have right here in our passage tonight. I don't know if it was 2, I don't know if it was 5, I don't know if it's 10. But I know that when he said smite, they acted. And when they acted, it was one of those things. It was bloody. There was chaos. And Amnon's dead in a short time. Blood everywhere. Didn't take long for him to die. And the vengeance was satiated. And so, we see that he basically was slaughtered because he thought 2 years, Absalom's probably forgot about it. He's probably thinking it's no big deal. But for 2 long years, it had percolated in his mind. One final thought tonight. Look at verse 29. And the servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. But then, I want you to notice the latter part of that verse. Then all the king's sons arose. It's almost as though they very casually got up and arose. I don't think that's the case at all. When they see these guys light up on their older brother Amnon, and they've got these 18-inch macheras going in him, out of him, and they see what's happening, their first thought is, they're killing the whole king's family. Everybody's going to die. So I don't think it was a casual get up. I think they jumped up, and I think they were doing their best to get out of Dodge. If you look at what it says that the king's sons arose, and every man gat upon his mule. Now somebody says, why did they ride mules? I guess because they wanted to. A mule was a very common animal to carry you around on. And so, they were strong. They were sturdy. And so these guys evidently had a hitching post that they were all tied up to. And out the door they went. And they're jumping on these mules. And I want to laugh about it just thinking about how these guys were probably trying to get out of there. And so you got this story, and it took 2 years to come to pass. 2 years. Some people say that revenge is something that's best served cold. I don't believe that. I think this was simply the first step in Absalom's grasp for the kingdom of Israel to be king. I think that it was the first step in his mind. And that's why whenever you look at what transpires in the coming weeks, I want you to remember and I want you to think back on that invitation that he gave to his father to come to his house for the party. And it was only because David said no that he began to go to plan B. But it may very well have been in the heart of Absalom to kill his own father at the same time he killed his older brother, which would have kind of opened the door for him to become king over the whole nation of Israel. So you think about that in the coming weeks. Let's stand together.